2 days from now, Springfield Symphony Orchestra will be well into their performance of Christmas Cookies. We will talk with Lexi of the Springfield Symphony coming up later in the program. Also, some Missouri lawmakers want to decriminalize knowingly giving someone HIV without them knowing it. Okay, talk about that coming up here in just a couple of moments. First, Nathaniel Pauly with the latest news update.
Yeah, so we saw our biggest risk for winter weather today, and it left us with barely anything at all. Like, we just got some snowflakes over in Webster County, but those even seemed to disappear the moment they hit the ground. The National Weather Service says the chance of precipitation will be gone after late tonight, and we don't expect another chance for precipitation until after Wednesday. Two people are dead after a crash in Verona late Wednesday night, so yesterday. The Missouri State Highway Patrol says a man named James Costanza and a woman named Kimberly Pauls are found dead 1 mile north of Highway 60 in a Jeep that had run off the road and hit a tree. Authorities believe the crash happened at 8. Neither Costanza or Pauls were wearing a seatbelt. And Missouri State University and Mercy Hospital are preparing to receive the coronavirus vaccine once it gets here. Both locations are equipped with powerful sub-zero freezers. The Moderna vaccine requires constant temperatures of negative 4 Fahrenheit, and the Pfizer vaccine requires temperatures of negative 94. Both locations will have the vaccine under high security to prevent theft or tampering. And that's the latest news.
KTTS First Alert forecast. Some of that rain, snow mix, still possible for one. Then just sprinkles this afternoon with a high of 39. Cloudy 32 tonight. Tomorrow, it'll become clear with a high of 49. Saturday, sunny 52. It's 34 and cloudy. Representative Phil Cristofanelli and incoming Republican Senator Holly Ryder and Greg Razor pre-filed legislation to change Missouri's laws regarding people with HIV on World AIDS Day. Ryder told the Missouri Times, "It's special that we get to file our bills on this day. We had so many advancements in HIV treatment since the 80s, and our statutes were put in place, and medical professionals, researchers, and scientists know so much more about it than they did. Living with HIV is not a death sentence any longer, and it's incredibly important to remove the stigma." The legislators joined a virtual press conference with multiple advocacy groups Tuesday, where Ryder outlined her planned legislation. She said she will sponsor what she calls a harm reduction package, which includes, which she can't let go of this, a prescription drug monitoring program to put all Missourians in a database. Ensures safe syringe access. This is the sort of thing that once upon a time you heard about in San Francisco and Portland, where drug addicts could come and exchange their needles for free, clean ones. And modernizes the state HIV regulations. Current Missouri statute mandates an individual who is knowingly infected with HIV not act in a reckless way that could expose another person to the disease without his or her knowledge or consent. So in other words, the law, it is criminal for somebody who knows that they're HIV positive to have sex with someone and not tell them that they are infecting them with HIV. It seems to make sense, right? I think most people, if they were infected with HIV and they found out the person who infected them knew that they had it but hid that information from them, they'd want that to be a crime. And it is a crime. It is a Class A or B felony. The way the statute is written, they claim, and we'll talk about this in a moment, deters people from finding out his or her status and seeking appropriate treatment. So what they claim is that this is victimizing the criminal. The person who knowingly infects someone with HIV. That the way the law is set up now, it will take a person who suspects that they have HIV, but they don't want to stop having sex with people and get in trouble because they won't tell them, so they won't get tested themselves. That way they can continue their reckless behavior. The bill would update the language to reflect more recent research on the disease. The law was since the law was enacted in the 80s, including removing spitting from the list of reckless actions. Cristofanelli said that he would sponsor two HIV-related bills in the lower chamber next year, including a similar modernization provision. He said, I think we need to let people know that while science has not yet found a way to cure HIV, we certainly have the tools at our disposal to end HIV if we take the correct actions. To that end, I intend to file two pieces of legislation in the upcoming session in order to put Missouri at the forefront of preventing the spread of HIV in our community and helping those affected with the disease. Now, I would suggest, if one of your goals is to stop the spread of HIV, decriminalizing knowingly spreading HIV to people without telling them is probably not the direction to go, if you're looking for meaningful results. The other legislation would concern pre-exposure prophylactics or PEP or and post-exposure. That's the same. It looks repetitive. Oh, pre and post-exposure. Relatively new treatments for the disease. The bill would allow pharmacists to screen patients and so forth. Razor, one of the other legislators said he would be handling a bill on the Senate side. Quote, our state's HIV-specific law was originally passed in the late 80s when our cultural understanding of HIV was informed by fear and stigma. This according to Missouri HIV justice organizer Molly Pearson. Thanks to advances in modern medicine, people living with HIV can live long, healthy lives without transmitting the virus. Using criminalization as a public health intervention simply does not work, and it upholds the stigma and fear of HIV that got us here in the first place. Well, I don't... Stigma and fear is not what caused the spread of AIDS. HIV. Now, I mean, let me tell you what I think motivates this. What motivates this is people who are advocates for those with HIV and AIDS feeling as if this law gives people with HIV and AIDS a bad name. And I think we can all completely agree that the way people view HIV AIDS today is much, much, much different than it was back in the 80s and even into the early 90s. You know, back, well, heck, we didn't even treat it like we treat COVID today, which is sort of weird. Gosh, that is so odd to think about that. As frightening and as scary as HIV was and how unknown, and it was, if you got it, you died. We didn't react the same way that we do with COVID. I mean, places weren't shut down. People weren't forced to wear masks, you know, or just the juxtaposition of the reaction to the two is insane when you think about it. But the fear was there because it was a horrible death. And it was associated with a lifestyle that people were less likely to want out in the open. And so that added to the stigma of it. And so you had the stigma of a lifestyle association on top of the fear factor. And so it definitely, without question, the way that people thought about AIDS back in the 80s was so much different than today. And today people don't worry about it so much. They don't think about it. And you see people like Magic Johnson, who at the time he got it, it was a really big deal. And people just still at that point, you thought, well, he'll be dying soon. And of course, he hasn't. Now, that isn't to say people don't still die from it. Horrible deaths. That does happen. It doesn't happen as often as it once did because of these advances when it comes to the different drugs and so forth. But here's where I have a problem. The dismissal of the impact on someone's life being infected with HIV simply because it's not an immediate death sentence. Now, when Holly Ryder has brought this up before, and it frankly, it's amazing to me that she, as far left as she is when it comes to certain issues and as big government as she is on issues, the fact that from, you know, South Central Missouri, you'd think one of the reddest, deepest, most conservative parts of the state, she manages to get elected is absolutely beyond me. It's just almost incomprehensible, but she does it. She brought this up last year, the year before, and I know this because I talked about it. The reason I talked about it is because there were a number of doctors that subsequent to this being in the news and me talking about it, you know, they thought it was a pretty interesting discussion. And what they relayed was that just because it's not a death sentence doesn't mean that it's not something that affects a person for the rest of their life. I mean, you are, while it may not, again, be this death sentence and you're, you know, lying in a bed in pain and agony for the remainder years of your life, you are still infected with something in which there is no cure that can completely alter the entire landscape of your life. Relationships being one of them. There are a lot of people out there that aren't going to want to have a romantic relationship with someone who, you know, has HIV, whether that is old school thinking or not. That's just a reality. The rest of your life being altered in terms of checkups and drugs that you have to take. And this idea that, well, you know, it's not that big of a deal anymore. It's not as scary as it once was. So this shouldn't be a criminal act any longer. That's totally dismissing the life-altering impact on somebody's life. And I think that's wrong. I don't think that it is right to knowingly do something to someone without their knowledge that will change the course of their life forever and then have that dismissed by lawmakers as no big deal. Now, understand this legislation isn't about, you know, decriminalizing just the, you know, we're not talking about just passing on HIV. This is specifically people who know that they have it and they do not tell the person that they are giving it to that they have it. So that person has no choice at all in making the decision whether or not they want to be in that situation. And decriminalizing that action, I just think it's wrong. And I think the motivation here that is behind this for a lot of people is they feel that the law makes criminals out of people with HIV. No, it doesn't. The law is specifically for people who knowingly give it to someone without telling them. And I would venture to say a majority of people with HIV don't do that. I would hope something like this does not make it through. I suspect that it won't, but I would like for, at least this is my assessment of it, it devalues the life and the quality of life of the victims wanting to decriminalize this. It takes the position, it's not that big of a deal if somebody without your knowledge infects you with HIV and you are saddled with the repercussions of that for the rest of your life. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. We go on these great escapes, as you know, every year, these beautiful, all-inclusive resorts. And of course, when we're, you know, talking about them, so you know what it is that you're going to experience, oftentimes we talk about the resort style pools, and you know they'll have, you know, theaters there. They've got different, you know, performances and game rooms for entertainment, of course, bistros and salons and a rooftop pub. All right, those are the sorts of things that you associate with, and all sorts of activities. You can have on-site, off-site activities. That's all inclusive resort. Well, that's also Turner's Rock. All of those things I just described. Turner's Rock, Springfield's newest senior living community, which is opening up this month. It's an incredible place. And as you can imagine, you think that doesn't sound like a senior living community. Well, it's sort of a new way of doing things. And the folks at Turner's Rock are doing it that way. They have 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units, 10 to 12 foot high ceilings. Oh, how are you going to change those light bulbs? You don't have to worry about that. There's maintenance that does that for you. You get housekeeping. Meals are included. There's a restaurant. I'm not talking about a cafeteria. I'm talking about a restaurant. You know, you go a host or hostess. You have servers take care of you. I could just tell you about it, but I recommend you check it out. You can see them online at turnersrockliving.com. Give them a call, 520-8204, or just stop by. They have a welcome center, and you can set up a tour. They've got, facility set up and furnished so you can get a sense of what the rooms look like lived in. It is Turner's Rock, just off or just east of 65 in Sunshine. Can't miss it. And again, turnersrockliving.com. Daily Caller put together a listing of the more well-known lawmakers who have gotten caught violating the very same laws that they have put into place or recommendations that they've made when it comes to COVID-19. Are these the ones that have gotten caught? And let me tell you, I'll just straight up give it to you here. They're Democrats. Some of these are more obvious. Democratic New York Mayor Bill de Blasio visited his local YMCA hours before Cuomo shut down all gyms in the state as COVID cases escalated in March. De Blasio's office said the mayor wished to visit the YMCA one more time before it was shut down, saying the YMCA has been a huge part of his life and his family's life. Oh, okay. I guess that makes it okay. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, or as I call her, Beetlejuice, urged citizens to stay at home in accordance with COVID restrictions until she needed to get a haircut. Following massive backlash, she defended her haircut, saying, quote, "I'm the public face of this city, and you know, I'm a person who takes personal hygiene very seriously, and I felt like I needed a haircut, so I got one." Well, isn't that nice for you? Democrat Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi attended a hair appointment in San Francisco in late August, though indoor hair salons in California were currently closed due to the COVID pandemic. But of course, she called, her people called, and they let her in. We all know about the recent Democratic California Governor Gavin Newsom photographed dining indoors at the Michelin-starred French Laundry. Democrat Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney was photographed dining indoors without a mask in Maryland in late August while indoor dining was prohibited in Philadelphia. Democratic Virginia Governor Ralph Northam was caught without a face mask at a Virginia beach in May while he was weighing the statewide order requiring citizens to wear masks. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser traveled to Vice President Joe Biden's early November victory speech in high-risk Delaware despite the D.C. Health Department travel requirements. She excused the trip by saying it was essential travel, so it was exempt. It was essential because it was her. We've got to take a break. There's more on the list. It's remarkable. What does that tell you, that no Republicans do this? It's always Democrats. Does that not tell you something? Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. Nathaniel Pauley with the latest news update.
Governor Parson has announced new plans to help hospitals across the state as they struggle to take on as many patients as possible, with Missouri hospitals oftentimes lack the beds for more patients. They also lack the staff to care for the people in those beds. So Parson has announced a partnership with medical company Vizient to supply 760 workers across the state. That deal should add around 600 beds for capacity statewide. The Missouri State Highway Patrol says two are dead after a crash in Verona on Wednesday. The crash happened around 8 o'clock when James Costanza drove his Jeep off the road a mile north of Highway 60 and hit a tree. Costanza and his passenger, a woman named Kimberly Pauls, died in the crash. Neither Pauls nor Costanza had their seatbelts on. And that's the latest news.
KTTS First Alert forecast, rain, snow. This afternoon, just sprinkles with a high of 39. Cloudy 32 tonight, 49 tomorrow, and mostly sunny on Saturday with a high of 52. It's 35 and cloudy. Before we finish up the list that was compiled by Mary Margaret Olihan at Daily Caller of lawmakers who have got caught violating the very rules they're requiring other people to follow, it is a time to talk a little bit about Christmas cookies, a.k.a. Springfield Symphony. We got Lexi with us of the Springfield Symphony. How do you do? It's good to hear from you.
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I am doing just fine. And we've got this this entire season has been food themed. And what better food at Christmas than Christmas cookies? December 5th. So that's Friday, or is that Saturday?
Saturday.
I don't even know what day it is.
Yeah, I mean, I've lost track too. But yeah, Saturday, we are having three concerts total of Christmas music. So it's going to be big day for us. We're going to have our free community holiday matinee at 11:30. all the tickets have been sold out for that for a couple of weeks. So it's going to be a packed house with our social distance seating. And then we have our full versions of the concerts, the paid concerts at 3 and 7:30. And we are actually almost sold out of single tickets for the 3 p.m. as well. But live streaming is still open, and we're excited to share these Christmas cookies. And I don't know about you, Nick, but a lot of my favorite Christmas cookies are the gingerbread and the peanut brittle and the fudge and peppermint bark. And that is what we're going to bring to the stage. So we're super excited to bring our classic sleigh ride piece by Leroy Anderson that everyone listens to on the radio each year. And it's the perfect sound of Christmas. But we are doing a lot of different things this year because I don't know if you remember, but we typically do a annual carol sing-along that happens at all of our holiday concerts. And we weren't able to do that this year because of COVID. So we got really innovative, and we've brought a lot of new Christmas pieces to this program on Saturday, including the Vaughn Williams, like Fantasia on Green Sleeves. And we actually have Christmas at the Movies by Bob Cragstad, which is a lot of like classic kind of sweeping music you see in all your favorite Christmas films. And then one of my favorites, which is The Skater's Waltz by Emil Waldteufel. And it sounds like it's from one of those Christmas claymations that everyone used to watch growing up as a kid. So it's going to be a really fun time on Saturday.
Now, will you explain, and you've done a good job of it in the past, but people that maybe have forgotten or they didn't hear in the past, how the online or virtual seats work?
Yeah, so anyone can go to purchase live stream access at our website. It's springfieldmosymphony.org. And we have a section on live streaming, but essentially people can just go on, click on our Christmas Cookies concert at 7:30 and purchase their live stream access. And it's really a phenomenal deal for what you get. It's $12 for watching the live stream, plus you get a recording afterward for up to a week after the performance, so you can rewatch it. And Mediacom actually comes and does our live streaming for us, and they do a phenomenal job. They really capture that essence of being up on stage with our orchestra players. Cool. So it's really a great experience.
So it's more enhanced than somebody just live streaming it from their phone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can actually see people's fingering like on their cellos and their violins, and you can see the different masks that each player is wearing too, which are very peculiar when you look at them up close. Plus, you know, the great part with our holiday matinee is you get to see all of the beautiful Christmas decorations, because we always have poinsettias lining the stage and lots of garland and lights. So it's very picturesque, and I honestly can't wait to go back and watch the recording once it's done.
All right, and so people that want to either buy tickets for to be there live for the performance or the live streaming, the best place, springfieldmosymphony.org, is that correct?
Yes, okay. They can purchase their single tickets online for the 3 p.m. on our website, as well as live stream access for our 7:30 p.m. concert.
All right, very good, Lexi Locke. Thank you as always. Appreciate it, and we know it'll be a great performance.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on, Nick.
Absolutely, you bet. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
All right, bye-bye now. That again, springfieldmosymphony.org, and I'm sure we'll have that link up also on our social media and at ksgf.com. I also want to remind you that Friday, which is tomorrow, I've got my day of holiday shopping, where I come to you every single hour after this show, during Glenn Beck, during Dana Lash, during Sean Hannity, as I will stop at different area local businesses. That's a pretty important thing right now. And talk with the owners of the businesses about different unique, thoughtful gift ideas you may have not thought about when it comes to Christmas time. A lot going on, and sometimes one of the more difficult things is figuring out a good gift to give someone. You know, it's not even always the hard to shop for person, but sometimes I just don't know. And so what we hope to do is out of the day at least give you one idea. And then in addition to that, while I'm at each location, I'm going to set up a registration there, and whatever the specific Christmas gift recommendation is, next week you can go, and this weekend as well, and register to win it. And then next Friday, I think that's the 11th, a winner will be drawn from each one. So you can actually register at every one of the locations and win more than one of the prizes. If we're at location, for example, Springfield Charcuterie is one of the locations, and we have them at ksgf.com. If you want to win their holiday gift, then you will go to Springfield Charcuterie and register for it there. And each of the other locations, we've got ABC Books, Just For Him, Ming Auto Beauty, Gun Tech and Nixa, all of those different locations you can go and register and win. If you win one, that doesn't exclude you from winning the others. Details at ksgf.com, and the entire day is sponsored by Wampler and Passanisi, trial attorneys, with transportation provided by Corwin Automotive of Springfield, and lunch by Emo's Pizza. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. This is a fun one. I don't know the words to it, but I always like the sound. Mary Margaret Olahan compiled a list of known lawmakers that have gotten caught violating the very rules that they are putting upon other people. Now, she doesn't specifically mention or make a point to mention this, but I will. They're all Democrats. You know, those of you out there that I would just say, if you are a person who has a distaste for politicians that are hypocrites and think that they are above the rules, this should tell you something. That all of these instances are Democrats. So we've went through earlier de Blasio of New York, Mayor Beetlejuice of Chicago, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, Gavin Newsom of California, Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney, Governor of Virginia Ralph Northam, the D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. We'll pick up from there. Democratic California Senator Dianne Feinstein was filmed chatting with her aides without a mask on in the corridors of a government building before entering a mid-November hearing. Feinstein has advocated for a nationwide mask mandate and attempted to prevent coronavirus funding from going to states that would not adopt that very mandate. Yet she has no problem, when she didn't know she was on camera, not wearing one while in public, in close quarters, talking with people. California lawmakers as a whole. Now, this was a bipartisan violation, though it's California. Bipartisan group of lawmakers traveled to Hawaii in mid-November for the annual Independent Voter Project Conference, a trip that grew criticism from those who said lawmakers should not be at a resort amidst rising coronavirus cases. The group included both Republicans and Democratic California Assembly members. And part of the reason that they did it in California, went to Hawaii to do it, was because in California, the rules and regulations wouldn't allow them to do it. New York Democratic leaders and elites attended a November private party did not adhere to the state's coronavirus restrictions. Photographs showed attendees included former Brooklyn Democratic Party Chairman Frank Sedillo and Deputy Brooklyn Borough President Ingrid Lewis Martin. Andrew Cuomo, of course, after telling New Yorkers to stay away from loved ones, Cuomo said that his mother and his daughter would be coming to his home for Thanksgiving. After massive backlash, the governor's office told the Daily Caller News Foundation that he would be busy on Thanksgiving and would not be home after all. Kate Brown, Democratic governor of Oregon, who cheered massive Black Lives Matter protests, told citizens to uninvite family members and loved ones for ahead of Thanksgiving, tweeting, quote, "This is hard, but making difficult sacrifices now will save lives this Thanksgiving. Keep it small. Uninvite them." Texas Judge Bill Gravel of Williamson County would have to plead guilty and pay a $1,000 fine for violating the stay-at-home order that he enacted. This after he was caught on camera attending his grandson's birthday party. And if my memory serves, I believe this is also the judge that threw that hair salon gal in jail because she was cutting hair. I believe that's the same judge. Democratic Denver Mayor Michael Hancock warned citizens to avoid travel in a tweet 30 minutes before he boarded a flight to travel to his family for Thanksgiving. His tweet said, "Stay home as much as you can, especially if you're sick. Host virtual gatherings instead of in-person dinners. Avoid travel if you can." Democrat San Jose Mayor Sam Lissardo attended a Thanksgiving party with family members who were not part of his own household after telling citizens to, quote, "cancel big gatherings this year for Thanksgiving." He said, "Cases are spiking in part because we're letting our guard and mask down with family and friends. Let's cancel the big gatherings this year and focus on keeping each other safe." Los Angeles County Supervisor Sheila Kuhl voted Tuesday to ban outdoor dining, calling outdoor dining a most dangerous situation. Then, of course, she was seen outdoor dining. She admitted through a spokesperson that she did dine on the very last day it was permissible. But if it's the most dangerous thing that you can do, why would you do it even if it's permissible? Democratic San Francisco Mayor London Breed dined in a semi-enclosed room at the French Laundry restaurant early November. 8 people attended that party in a partially enclosed room with a ceiling and chandelier, the same kind that Gavin Newsom dined in. Democratic Austin Mayor Steve Adler, this is one of my favorites. Maybe it's just because it hit the news recently. He hosted 20 guests at an outdoor wedding and reception for his daughter in early November, then boarded a private jet the next day and flew to Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, for vacation. In a Facebook video to Austin residents, he said, "We need to stay home if we can. This is not the time to relax. We are going to be looking really closely. We may have to close things down if we are not careful." Now, the hilarious thing about this was the video that he posted telling residents of his city that they need to stay home, he filmed while in Cabo San Lucas. They really, truly, it's not just rhetoric, genuinely believe that they are our rulers. And the rules are not meant for them. And for whatever reason, there are a significant number of people who want rulers to rule over them, that they continue to support these people and vote them back into office. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. Arizona Republican Party Chairwoman Kelly Ward said yesterday the 2% of the duplicate ballot sample her team was allowed to examine were changed to hurt President Donald Trump. One of the ballots they discovered was changed from a vote for Trump to Biden. It's changed. Another was inexplicably taken away from Trump. So here's what happened. They were allowed to see 100. Okay, here's just 100 sampling, and they found, you know. Now, some people are going to say, well, somebody changing two votes out of 100, that's not that many. Well, that suggests 2% of the vote was changed, which is a 4% swap, ultimately, because you're taking 2% away from one and giving it to the other. So that would be a net gain for Trump of 4 percentage points. I've watched, like many of you, testimony in Arizona of whistleblowers who have said, listen, this is what I saw. I saw them doing these illegal activities. There was a press conference with two whistleblowers from the United States Postal Service admitting that they participated in the delivery of ballots from out of states to other states. There have been numerous whistleblowers at hearings in Michigan explaining the illegal activities that they've seen. Yet we're still told there's nothing to see here. I said it yesterday or the day before, and I'll say it again. If those, all of that, if eyewitnesses, if the finding of ballots that were changed by officials, if people who participated in acts of voter fraud are admitting it, is not evidence of any wrongdoing, then please tell me, what do you look for? What is it that you consider evidence of wrongdoing? Because maybe that will help clear the air a bit so that everyone's not wasting their time. It is absolutely sinful that people in the media either refuse to even look beyond their bubble to recognize. I mean, because one of two things is happening. Either they have no idea that these whistleblowers exist, that these participants in the activity who are admitting it exist, that the actual evidence of ballots that were switched exist, which means they're totally negligent, willfully in their duty. Or they just are telling you and themselves that that doesn't count. Well, if that doesn't count, tell me, give me an example of what would. I'd like to hear that. Glenn Beck's coming up next. I will talk to you tomorrow. I'm Nick Reed. Springfield's Talk 104.1.